I'm Stephanie Wilson, and you're listening to Freedom Over Fascism.
So we had students coming in by the thousands, parents with kids on their shoulders who would drop their school-age kids at school. And with tears in their eyes, said to me, you know, Gloria, I dropped my kids off before I came up here today, and I just have to pray that they're safe. They wanted to be recognized. They wanted us to acknowledge what happened and that they were there for that reason. And we were prevented from speaking. So there was no opportunity when all those parents were there to say, we see you, we hear you, and we care about your families, and we care about what's happened, and we want to address this issue. We weren't allowed to do that. And so that's why the three of us went to the well between bills, because we wanted to say that we saw them and that we heard them. And that's what we did.
Hi, friends. Today, I'm going to be talking to Tennessee State Representative and candidate for U.S. Senate, Gloria Johnson. I, like many of you, first became aware of Representative Johnson right after the school shooting in Nashville that killed 3 9-year-olds and 3 adults. Representative Johnson, along with the 2 youngest Black representatives in the State House, Justin Pearson and Justin Jones, walked to the well of the State House and supported citizens protesting school shootings. As we're all now aware, the 2 Black representatives were expelled from the State House, while Gloria Johnson averted expulsion by 1 vote. The following day, Vice President Kamala Harris made an emergency trip to Nashville to decry the authoritarian and overtly racist actions of the Tennessee State House to silence members who represent more than 100,000 Tennesseans. These 3 lawmakers, who became known as the Tennessee 3 nationally, gained attention by breaking decorum, standing with people protesting gun violence, and refusing to let business go on as usual. These 3 representatives followed the teaching of civil rights leader John Lewis, who himself led sit-ins and nonviolent protests in Nashville and truly caused good trouble. They rose to meet a moment of great possibility inside a moment of authoritarian overreach and leveraged the attention their disruption brought. I'll talk to Representative Johnson about those moments and what it's been like since the Tennessee 3 broke through the national noise in April 2023. Everyone in MAGA capture states should take note of what these 3 did. They found a moment and stood up for freedom. They made a stink. They stopped being civil. They made the racist MAGAs expose themselves, and the country watched. And as we've seen, courage is contagious. Those of us in MAGA captured states need to be doing this regularly. Stop being civil. Stop going with the flow. Stop being cowed by the supermajority flexing its power. Because when you respect the decorum of fascist bodies, you lose the power of your voice and those of your allies. You also lose the ability to capture the attention of people who agree with you, let alone the whole country. For Representative Johnson, seizing the moment and standing against mass shootings with her 2 young Black colleagues led her to become a national candidate for Senate with enough national attention to raise money from across the country. Whether or not she can win the Democratic primary and go on to defeat Marsha Blackburn is yet to be seen. But her example is one that progressives across the country need to follow if we're to halt the slow motion fascist coup overtaking our country. Before we start our interview, I just want to remind you that you can get early access to podcasts, bonus content, and backstage glimpses by becoming a patron and helping me feed my family. Patreon.com/freedomoverfascism. Now for our interview. Representative Gloria Johnson, thank you so much for joining us on Freedom Over Fascism. Since you're running for a big office, I'd love it if you would introduce yourself to our listeners.
Yes, I'm State Representative Gloria Johnson. I'm from Knoxville, Tennessee. That's the district I represent, is in Knoxville, Tennessee, which is very red, East Tennessee, part of our state. And I am running for U.S. Senate against Marsha Blackburn because it has to be done.
So many of our listeners, like me, first heard of you when you and Representative Jones and Representative Pearson went to the well of the State House supporting the parents of school children who had been shot at Covenant School. Can you tell us a bit more about what led up to that moment and what happened then and what followed?
Absolutely. You know, It was just a horrible tragedy. I was sitting in committee when I first heard about the shooting at Covenant. And then we were just waiting to find out, you know, were there any fatalities? Mm-hmm. What was the situation? As we move later through the day, we find out that three children lost their lives and three staff members. And it's just devastating. I'm a former school teacher. I taught for 27 years. And when I was teaching at Central High School in Knoxville, we had a school shooting and lost a student, Ryan McDonald. Mm-hmm. And it was in the morning in the cafeteria during breakfast when almost all the kids were gathered there or around there before school started. I'm down preparing my classroom, waiting for the kids for the bell and for the kids to come to class. And all of a sudden I look up the hill and kids are just running down the hill, screaming, just came into my room with terror on their faces. And took a minute for them to be able to articulate what they saw and what had happened. And so I'll never forget that day and the life that was lost and the trauma that the kids experienced, that the teachers, that the families experienced, and the idea that we've done nothing about gun violence since then. And then we see it again right down the road from the Capitol, just a few miles. And it looks like maybe somebody's going to do something. We've got, this is a school that was probably predominantly Republican families, you know, a Christian school. And you think maybe that will have an effect. Maybe this time will be different. And they sort of acted like they might do something. And then ultimately the special session was a betrayal of families. But in the days after that happened, the thing that was so hopeful to me was so many thousands gathered at the Capitol. You know, they wanted us to talk about gun violence. It was, you know, we were getting towards the end of session. We had a few weeks left to go. And these families wanted us to talk about gun violence, and we should have been talking about gun violence. We can multitask. We can talk about the bills already on the table, but we can also talk about what's needed right now because of what just happened down the street. So we had students coming in by the thousands, parents with kids on their shoulders who had dropped their school-age kids at school. And with tears in their eyes, said to me, you know, Gloria, I dropped my kids off before I came up here today. And I just have to pray that they're safe when we go pick them up or when we go meet them at the bus. They wanted to be recognized. They wanted us to acknowledge what happened and that they were there for that reason. And we were prevented from speaking during welcoming and honoring, which we usually have. They did not allow us to speak. When we were talking about bills, we wanted to say something and they would gavel us down or not call on us. So there was mm-hmm. no opportunity when all those parents were there to say, we see you, we hear you, and we care about your families, and we care about what's happened, and we want to address this issue. We weren't allowed to do that. And you couldn't have walked through those families and those students begging, the students literally begging for someone to pay attention to the fact that they're scared in their classrooms. My colleagues walked onto that House floor through the crowds and did not even make eye contact with them. I don't know how somebody can do that. I really don't, to reach out and hug them and talk to them about what they were feeling. Just acknowledge that they were there, why they were there, and that we would discuss the topic. And that we couldn't get that from the MAGA supermajority, and they couldn't get that. And so that's why the three of us went to the well between bills, because we wanted to say that we saw them and that we heard them. And that's what we did.
Well, I think from a parent's perspective, I have a 15-year-old. I think that's one of the most important things, that they feel seen and heard. And that's one of the things that MAGA is not doing. I'm not running for office, but I think I can say pretty clearly that I don't think they want it to stop. Because if they did, they would be talking about it and looking those people in the eye. And they're not. The one thing that was different about this from my perspective is that somehow the three of you going to the well broke through, right? This is happening all over America, and occasionally you get a little bit of national news breakthrough, But more and more school shootings happen and they don't even make the national news. So what the three of you did manage was to break through the noise and enough to become nationally known. And I think that can be a model for other officials throughout the country to think about how they can also break through the noise. Not that you're forgetting or using these grieving parents as objects to further your political agenda. It's quite the opposite. You're finding a way to find a voice for them. Can you tell me a little bit more about the aftermath of that moment when you broke decorum and you stood up against the supermajority that was silencing you?
And you know, that the thing, the interesting thing about it was such a terrible and traumatic time. The idea of going through a hearing and trying, you know, expulsion resolution is, and that sort of thing is terrible. But it really, it gave us more hope than we'd ever had. Because like you talk about that breakthrough, there's the House floor is a big room in the Capitol, and there are these big stained glass windows all around. And I felt like that the windows burst open and sunlight shone on that House floor for the first time. People all across Tennessee started tuning in who were not tuning in. People across the nation tuned in. And people internationally even tuned in. I still get messages from new Canadian friends that I've made that have said, you know, we're watching Special Session from Canada and can't believe it. But I think all of us feel this erosion of democracy and have concerns. Even if you're in a blue state, you see what's happening. And everybody is worried about this. And so they're tuning in and paying attention. And that is hopeful because this has created, we've already had a movement in Tennessee, but this gave so much fuel and energy to the movement. We've got young people that are standing up and speaking out, and they stuck with it all summer long. They did rallies. They spoke to all the legislators. They held rallies in other counties, really staying active and really keeping this going. And these Covenant mothers are extremely supportive of us, regardless of what party they're from, because they saw us as the people who stood up for them. A lot of people want to claim we use them, whatever. I was just compelled in my heart to speak. And that was the only way that I knew to speak to these parents and to these kids in the rotunda, in the galleries, out around the legislature. We felt it was the only thing that we could do. And it was so imperative that they heard us, that we saw them and heard them and cared about their issue.
That very much came through. I was listening to Representative Jones on a different podcast, and one of the things he said really struck me. And that is, courage is contagious. And that's one of the reasons why I'm honing in on this moment, because I think that people, progressives, Democrats in other states, let a lot of these moments pass by, and we need to create more of them, more of these moments to grab the attention of the country, because it feels like we're watching a train wreck in slow motion.
Yeah. And what we saw, you know, afterwards, we saw Representative Zoe Zephyr. They tried to silence her as well.
Right.
She stood up and did everything right. We saw it in a couple of other states. You know, one thing that you see when these MAGA Republicans try something, the other states are going to pick up on it and they're going to try it too. And that speaking truth to power is critical. And sometimes some people in a supermajority want to try to, oh, well, let's not make them mad, or, you know, but you should always stand up in these sort of situations and speak truth to power, because we are the only ones. You know, I'm sent there to represent 70,000 people. Those 70,000 people want gun sense legislation. And that's their voice I'm lifting up. And we're lifting up, and we have as much right as the speaker who has 70,000 people in his district has to talk about the issues my constituents care about. And they act as if they're not silencing me. They're not silencing Rep. Jones or Rep. Pearson. They're silencing the 70,000 people that we represent and who sent us there. And that's what people really have to understand it's about. And because they don't have any ideas, that's why they silence good ideas, because they don't have any ideas. They don't want to talk about policy. They want to divide. And, you know, those poor moms that came to Special Session, all you're allowed to have is like an 8.5 by 11 piece of paper. So it's computer paper or notebook paper that they write a sign on. And they made rules not to allow them to hold their signs up during a committee or during session. But you know what? You can carry your firearms into committee. And that's outrageous.
It's horrifying to silence those mothers and those families. But I think MAGA does have ideas. And I think those are the ideas that they're passing. The ideas are cruel and they're to control people and they're to divide us against each other so they can grab more power. But I think the majority of people see that. And when they see someone who sees them like you did, they understand what that means. There was a moment. There was a moment in Indiana a couple months ago when the NRA convention was there and the NRA people were just invited onto the floor of the House and were lauded. And that could have been a moment where representatives would be talking to the people and could have stood up, but they didn't take advantage of that. And so the fact that you did feels natural to you, but I think it's extraordinary. And I want to just say that it's extraordinary in this sort of environment that we're living in right now. And you stood up for these people and they really felt your care and attention. Can you tell me what happened afterwards? Like all of a sudden you had a lot of this national attention and you're running for Senate. How did that come about?
Well, I was thinking about running for Senate before that, just because we need somebody to be a strong Democratic voice that doesn't back down from our values. You know, we want people to have access to affordable health care. We want to raise the wage. The minimum wage in Tennessee is the federal minimum wage, $7.25. Nobody can live on that. You know, access to public education, both at the state and federal level, there are so many pushing to privatize our public education. Public education is the bedrock of democracy. They're telling us what we can and can't teach. They don't want to teach our true history. And it's terrifying. So what we saw when we came back, obviously Representative Pearson and Representative Jones were reelected, as we all knew they would be. The people chose them for a reason, and that reason is because they will speak up and speak for them and lift the people's voices. And so what we saw the Republicans do was, again, it's like they're just smacking themselves in the face. They don't understand that everything they're doing is bringing negative attention to them. And so I just started really feeling it is important that we have a challenge to Senator Blackburn, who has been labeled the most corrupt senator in Congress, the most corrupt person in Congress in the past. That's a title that she was given.
In this Congress, it's really tough to be the most corrupt.
And we were just trying to negotiate prescription prices for seniors and insulin in D.C., and she voted against it. Our seniors are doing everything they can to make it on that fixed income. And she does it. She calls it socialism if we lower those drug prices for them. I mean, we already negotiate prices for veterans. What is your problem with making sure everybody's able to afford their prescriptions? And then when it comes to the gun sense, she takes over $1 million from the NRA. She's not going to care about Tennessee families and the fact that 80% of them want gun sense legislation. And heavens to Betsy, she's going on national TV saying that I support abortion after a child is born. I mean, that's murder. That's crazy. That is crazy talk. I mean, she is so outrageous in saying I'm the most woke person and that I'm, you know, a radical socialist. You know, she wouldn't know what a socialist was if Karl Marx was doing her hair. You can't, it's hard to take her seriously. It truly is. On Labor Day, she tweeted out that leftists were trying to take her grill. I don't even know half the time what she's talking about.
So you've gained national attention and you're running. How has that been received in Tennessee and across the country?
There is more energy than I ever imagined. We did a launch and we started in Knoxville, where I'm from. Then we went to Nashville. Then we went to Memphis and the crowds just got bigger and bigger. And in crowds, I had Republicans, independents and Democrats were present at my launch. And since then, it's just you know, it's really taken off and people are involved and people already want yard signs and merchandise and how do I volunteer and all of it. It's like, this is why I kicked off early. So we have a lot of time to build out and all of that. But the energy is just remarkable. And it's great. And a lot of people are getting involved. A lot of the Nashville musicians are getting involved. Everybody wants something different. They want someone that represents them. They really do. And, you know, again, Marsha Blackburn the other day was tweeting about Portland, Oregon. Well, when is the last time she was in Portland, Tennessee? You know, probably not in a very long time, if ever.
One of the things I've noticed is that there's a lot of national support for you. I was looking at Katie Porter's donation page, and she is giving half of her donations to her and half to you. And I thought that that was really an amazing vote of confidence from someone from a state that's quite different from Tennessee. Well, parts of it are different from Tennessee, but I just thought that was pretty indicative of what I've seen from my end.
It really is. People, you know, senators I've talked to from all over the country are very supportive, want to know how they can help. You know, the folks at National have been really helpful and supportive. And I think that people are starting to see that something is happening in Tennessee. You know, we have started building this multiracial, multi-generational, and quite frankly, multi-partisan coalition. And we're going to just continue to build that all the way to November in 2024. And that's how we're going to make this happen, because people go, oh, it's double digits. Well, double digits was 10 or 11 points when Marsha Blackburn ran against Phil Bredesen in Tennessee. And I think that because of the Dobbs decision, because of refusal of these folks to even look at gun violence legislation, that we've got a different footing right now in Tennessee, and things are happening. We're building this coalition, and it is strong, and there's so much energy behind it. I think we're going to be able to carry this through to November and shock a whole lot of people.
Well, I really hope so. One of the things that I've learned is that you have a primary. How have you found that the situation where there are already people running and you're going to have to face a primary challenge before getting to run against Senator Blackburn?
Yeah, it's funny because I'm from East Tennessee, which is very red. We don't typically have primaries. We're lucky if we have one Democrat, you know, running against the Republican. So, but, you know, Marquita Bradshaw's from Memphis. I think my other challenger's from Memphis as well. And so they're used to primaries there. But I mean, you know, I'm going to be all above board. I don't feel like I'm running against them. I feel like I'm running against Marsha Blackburn. And Marquita was a nominee against Bill Hagerty a few years ago, and I supported her. But I really think that we need a really strong campaign. This is something I've done. I have won in upside down districts. I win my district overwhelmingly with Republican support as well. And I think that this is just critical in a real challenge to Marsha Blackburn. And that's why I decided that I was going to do it and plan on winning the primary. And hopefully having the support of my other colleagues.
Well, that sounds very reasonable. Actually, you said something that I really wanted to touch on, which is the idea that a lot of these MAGA people at the state level don't have Democrats running against them. A lot of them have run unopposed. And, you know, the people who have the most extreme policies have often run unopposed. And I know that you know that there's the organization Every State Blue, and they've created Blue Ohio, Blue Missouri, Blue Texas, and I know Tennessee is in the mix to try to start to run candidates in every district, even the reddest, where they don't think they have a chance to win. And maybe they don't, but whatever votes they are able to get out in the reddest places of the red, that helps someone like you. Those are votes that you probably wouldn't have gotten if there wasn't somebody out there asking for a Democratic vote at the top of the ticket.
And it also works from the bottom of the ticket up. So it's really important. And I love to watch David Pepper from Ohio when he does his whiteboards. I think He's one of the best at kind of explaining to folks who don't understand how the game is in the states and not at the federal level. And so I'm always sharing his videos because I really want people to understand everybody votes in those federal elections, but state elections are so critical. And, you know, the way I feel about it, some of our districts are so red and people don't want to run. I said, but what you're doing is you're talking about the issues that we care about, which is the issues that most of the people in your district, quite frankly, also need and care about. They just don't hear them. So from our side.
Right.
And so if you're not running, then you're not out there talking about those issues and how we're the ones that are going to help lift up Tennessee families. It's not going to ever be the Republicans. And so it's just critical that you get out there and give people a choice. And you may not, it might take one, two, three cycles, maybe four, but it's never going to happen if you're not out there challenging them and talking about the issues that we care about and we fight for.
Right. And asking people for their vote, because when was the last time they had a choice? I talked to Jonathan Zucker and David Pepper on this podcast, and they worked together to create Every State Blue. And they made the point that the goal of every candidate needs to be getting the most votes, right? It comes even before winning. So if you're out there to get the most votes, then one cycle, two cycle, four cycles down the road, then you can really start building more momentum.
That's what we're thinking about here. You know, we're going to continue to build this movement. I think we can make it happen this cycle. But again, we're building for the future. And, you know, I'm going to be in all these areas and districts that we might be able to pick up state house seats. And the more people that are in there in those counties talking about that and talking about our values and the legislation that we bring, the more likely people are to vote. And it will help us down ticket. It will, you know, help in my race. And I had some conversations with Stacey Abrams. And one thing she said was, you know, go everywhere, go where they don't expect you to go.
Yes.
And I'm absolutely going to do that. I've been doing that, actually. And it is great because once you start having conversations with people, you find out that much of what they really need are policies that we are bringing. But they, Republicans are able to divide them or divide us on those wedge issues that really don't affect their families at all, quite frankly. You know, this whole Tennessee and their drag ban and anti-LGBTQ legislation. This doesn't affect other families, you know? And why are you getting so honed in on this particular issue when what you really need is paid family leave?
Or maybe you do have a kid who's queer and they are so scared about coming out to you that they won't be able to get the support, or if they're trans, they wouldn't be able to get the care that they need. And I bet there's a lot more of those families than people know about because it's not an environment where they can be open. I say this to a lot of people. I actually live in Massachusetts, which is not a secret. I do a lot of work in Indiana, but I live in Massachusetts. So here, it's quite acceptable in many places to be queer. And the number of kids who are on the LGBTQ spectrum is astronomical. It's 20-25%. And so when you do have an environment where that's accepted, these kids can live authentically. You see a shift in this generation. So I think that this next upcoming generation, Gen Z, is going to be the generation that really flips the script on the whole country. If we can get there long enough to get these high school kids registered and voting, and they're ready.
I mean, they're so energetic, they care deeply, and they're so well informed on the issues. You know, I just say let them lead because they're doing amazing jobs. They got massive groups to the Capitol. You know, Vanderbilt comes marching down all together down the street from Vandy, and it was a sight to see. And the high school kids were already there, and it's just absolutely beautiful. They're showing up, they're speaking in our committees. It's great. And they're not backing away. And they don't have these biases, and they're not bigoted like so many of the older folks are, quite frankly. And I love to see it. always the young people working with some of the seniors that have been in the fight for, you know, that abortion is healthcare for mm-hmm. years. And they're kind of mentoring the young ones. And it's just such a beautiful interaction. And it's great to see it. I just hold so much hope for this generation. And people always say, well, the young people have to go vote. And I said, like, you know what? The candidates have to speak to young people and they have to care about their issues. Talk about, if you want young people to go and vote for you, talk about the things they care about. Talk about climate change. Talk about gun violence. Mm-hmm. You know, talk about equality and equity. Those are things that they're listening to. And if you want them to vote, talk about the things that they care about.
Right. And also make it possible for them to vote. I think in this country, we have gotten into the habit of talking about people who don't vote as apathetic, as opposed to really thinking about what the barriers to them voting are. I think it's much more voter suppression a lot of the time and much less apathy, or that apathy is a product of voter suppression. So you don't, if you don't have a choice, why do you bother?
I don't know how it is in Indiana, but in Tennessee, if you work at the University of Tennessee, you can use your UTID to vote if you're a professor. But if you're a student, you cannot use your UTID to vote. So you can't use a college ID to vote, which is outrageous. And that's how I first met Justin Jones, Representative Jones, was he was attending FIST as a freshman and was advocating for student IDs to vote. And the FISC students would come and talk to the representative speaking committee. They stood vigil outside in the rotunda singing songs while we were, you know, talking about this legislation. So it is voter suppression in so many ways, and making access to the polls more difficult, especially for certain mm-hmm. groups. With the voter ID, it was a senior issue because we also had a law that if you were over a certain age, you didn't have to have a photo on your ID. Mm-hmm. So then we had older seniors that may not even have a driver's license place. Only half of our counties, I think, have a place you can go to get your driver's license. So then you've got the hurdle for seniors of getting that new picture ID or getting that picture put on their ID. Any barricade they can think of, they will do it. And here in Tennessee, you can't just register to vote after you've served your time. It's a long process that you have to go through to get your voting rights back. And it should be, if you've served your time, then you deserve to register to vote.
Absolutely. In Indiana, I think the students aren't allowed to have polling places on campus and also can't use their student ID. So it's pretty bad there, too. And then you wonder why places like Michigan, where the students turn out in astounding numbers when they're voting on campus, and in places like Indiana and Tennessee, they aren't showing up, but there's tremendous hurdles. You know, you can't do absentee ballots very easily, and it's really hard to vote.
I think in Tennessee, when the 2008 election, they had more college kids vote than ever. And it was after that mm-hmm. that they sort of shut down the college polling place. And now they have it, but it's not great access. And it's only 4 days of early voting, not the whole 2 weeks plus. And it was just mm-hmm. a year or maybe 2 years ago where Dondi Plowman, the chancellor, went to the election commission and said, hey, this was during COVID. She said, hey, we can vote at Thompson Bowling. It's huge. We have all kinds of space. People can social distance. We'll set it all up for you. And the election commission said, no, thanks.
Right. Well, I think the more of us who vote, the more people who vote for human rights and gun sense legislation and a living wage, the more they don't want us voting. As long as they can suppress the vote, they can rig the system. One of the things that I say is that Indiana isn't a red state. It's a rigged state. And I think that probably applies in Tennessee, too.
Yeah. And we say we're not a red state. We're a non-voting state. And because we're all in the bottom five, I think, always. And we were at the very bottom a couple of years ago. And it's so frustrating. Mm-hmm. And a part of it is you know, that we are a one-party state, it feels like, largely, and an oppressive supermajority, and people aren't even really sure how you get out of it. And so that's why it's so critical that we do this messaging and we organize in rural areas and all of that, because it's just, it's critical that people really understand what and who they're voting for. And understand, you know, I always tell people in, when it comes to our state legislature, go to Tennessee Campaign Finance. It's so easy to find out who's donating to the people that are your representatives. It's clear when you look at it. My colleagues across the aisle very often, almost no $20 donations from regular people down the street.
Yep.
Corporations, lobbyists, PACs, all of that stuff. But if you go to my donations, it's four to five. I mean, I was a teacher. My friends are teachers. They're $20 and $50 givers for the most part. Right now on my federal, you will see that any people gave anywhere from $1 to a max out. But, you know, these are just regular people, and there's thousands and thousands and thousands of them. You're not going to, I don't take corporate money. You know, I'm not going to do that. And so people need to understand, whoever's filling your coffers for your campaign, that's who you work for.
That's right. I worked on a campaign last season in Indiana, and my candidate's opposition didn't raise any money because Americans for Prosperity paid for everything. He didn't need to go out and ask for anybody's money. He was never, ever in public.
Well, right. I mean, and that's who we work for.
Well, I am so excited to see you out there leading and having someone to look up to who's really walking the walk and standing up for all the people that we care about. I'm glad that Stacey Abrams is helping. You know, she's one of my heroes. And I'm so excited that you came to talk to our little podcast, because we're out there trying to do this. We're advocates, we're candidates, we're officials. And as we say, hope is contagious. Hope is an action. It's getting out there and doing it. And you are, and it's really amazing to see. So thank you so much for coming on. And we wish you not just luck, but skill and coalition. And we'll help you do everything we can to get your message out.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the invite. Thrilled to be here. And that's one thing I learned, especially during the whole covenant situation. And so many different Kentucky legislators reached out to us. And in a wide variety of states, Virginia, Georgia, and California. I mean, just they all reached out to us. And it was really important to reach out, especially to those other really red states, to have those conversations and say, hey, there's some value in us talking together and talking about what works. You know, what works there? What did you guys get done that maybe we could do here? Right. And that sort of thing. So just all of us having these conversations, I think, is super productive. And it's how we're going to change this and move forward with progress.
Right. And it's not an overnight thing. All those states that turned blue, they've been working on it for a decade. Thank you so much. And you have an open invitation closer to the election. You can come back, and we would love to talk to you whenever you want. And I will make space in the calendar whenever you need it.
Well, great. Thanks so much. I enjoyed it.
Thanks for listening. Please join our Patreon at patreon.com/freedomoverfascism and subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts. We thank you for choosing freedom over fascism.